I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, we'll hear from gospel music legend Andre Crouch, and we'll get some fresh perspectives on the week's news from the guys in the barbershop. But first, we're going to dig into some of this week's big political stories. President Obama has been reaching out to and getting an earful from some of the key constituencies that helped him to victory in 2008, African-American and Latino Democrats. Unemployment is high in those groups. Progress on immigration reform has stalled, and other political leaders in those groups have been getting restless. So will that translate into a lack of enthusiasm in the grassroots in the upcoming election? Or maybe not. Meanwhile, on the Republican side, the ground seems to be shifting among the presidential hopefuls. The political novice Herman Cain scored an upset win in Saturday's straw poll in Florida, which has raised questions about whether the momentum behind Texas Governor Rick Perry has cooled. And now at least one poll shows former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney back in the lead for the Republican nomination. We wanted to talk about all this, so we've called upon three trusted political observers. Mary Kate Carey is a columnist and blogger for U.S. News and World Report. She's also a former speechwriter for President George H.W. Bush. Maria Teresa Kumar is the executive director of Voto Latino. That's a nonpartisan organization that encourages Latinos to be civically engaged. And Cynthia Tucker is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. She's currently professor of journalism at the University of Georgia. They're all here with me in Washington. Ladies, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you.
Glad to be here.
So let's start with this whole thing, Cynthia, about the tension, if that's what we should call it, between President Obama and his critics, particularly in the African-American and Latino communities. Last week, the president made headlines last Saturday night when he addressed the Black Caucus, the Congressional Black Caucus. They were having their annual legislative weekend. And let's play a short clip of what the president had to say.
Take off your bedroom slippers. Put on your marching shoes. Shake it off. Stop complaining. Stop grumbling. Stop crying. We are going to press on. We've got work to do.
People who were there say the president, you know, that the standing ovation, thunderous applause from the, you know, more than 2,000 people there. But after that, some grumbling. Like, here's South Carolina Congressman James Clyburn. He's a member of the Congressional Black Caucus. He was talking with my colleague Michelle Norris, and this is what he had to say.
When I heard it, I cringed because I kind of anticipated there's so much of what came in the first part of the speech would get lost, and people would be hanging on to those words. Though I'm of the opinion that it is a little bit unusual for people to believe that any one segment is going to be 100%. When the president ran in 2008, he did not have 100% of the black vote.
Well, Cynthia, what did you make of the president's remarks? I'm interested in how you reacted to them.
Well, Michelle, I wasn't there. But I watched the entire speech on YouTube later because I was curious about the controversy that's developed. And let me say that you just played the one segment that has been controversial. And those were his remarks at the very end, and they were apparently extemporaneous. Nothing else in the entire speech.
Which means
speech,
he believed it. He meant it. That's what he really feels.
Nothing else in the entire speech was controversial, and I heard it very differently. I heard those remarks as in keeping with the rest of the speech, which was a call to arms to the Congressional Black Caucus, not to average black voters saying, stop your crying, stop your complaining if your house has been foreclosed on. But he had been speaking to the Congressional Black Caucus about the things that had been accomplished together. He talked about the Republican opposition to his jobs bill. And at the very end, he said, we're going to press on. I talked to the chairman of the Congressional Black Caucus, Emanuel Cleaver, yesterday. He said much of what James Clyburn said. He said he thought it was unfortunate that the president made those remarks at the very end, but he wasn't offended because he took the entire speech in context. Having said all that, let me say that I think this is one of those Washington-based controversies that will pass very quickly. By this time next year, very few people will remember this. And overall, while black voters, like many of the president's supporters, are not quite as supportive as they were 4 years ago, 3 years ago, largely, they still approve of the president.
Well, two thoughts, though, occur to me. And Maria Teresa, I'm going to turn to you next. Is this about his speech to black political elites, or is he talking to black grassroots voters? So that's the question. But the other point that was made here is that some were complaining that the president takes on the scolding tone when he's only talking to African Americans. And they said, well, I don't hear him talking that way to other groups. Which brings me to Wednesday, when the president sat down with a group of Latino journalists, and he was asked some pointed questions about why he hasn't done more to fight for comprehensive immigration reform in their view. And this is how he responded.
This notion that somehow I can just change the laws unilaterally is just not true. We are doing everything we can administratively. But the fact of the matter is there are laws on the books that I have to enforce. And I think there's been a great disservice done to the cause of getting the DREAM Act passed and getting comprehensive immigration passed by perpetrating the notion that somehow, by myself, I can go and do these things.
A little slap on the hand there, too, I would say, Maria Teresa Kumara. How do you respond, or how did you interpret the president's remarks, and how are they being interpreted more broadly?
Well, I think it's one thing to say my power of authority is limited as president of the United States. Okay. But I think the problem is that under his administration, he's had the record number of deportations, and he can have a stay. And it's curious, you talk about who is his audience. Is it the elite of the Latinos, or is it his voting public? Perfect example, 2 weeks ago, they had the Congressional Hispanic Caucus Institute. President came, Michelle Obama came, addressed the crowd, standing ovation by the people that were sitting down having dinner. The servers, also Latino, had a very different reaction. Because they're the ones, unfortunately, that are seeing they're losing their wages. They're the ones that are struggling, losing their jobs. So there is a disconnect. And I think that's where the administration really has to get into campaign mode. And I think that's exactly what was happening during the Congressional Black Caucus, is that all of a sudden we, for the very first time, are seeing the president leave kind of this head of state position and moving more into, we have to start fighting. It's more of that gritty area, whether you agree or not with how his message was. It was more of, we have to roll up our sleeves and start fighting. And I think that's what the American people are actually looking for at the same time. They're looking for that candidate that is basically saying, you know what, there's a lot of work to do.
We're talking about this week's political news with Maria Teresa Kumar of Voto Latino, Mary Kate Carey of U.S. News and World Report, and Cynthia Tucker, University of Georgia journalism professor and Pulitzer Prize winner. Mary Kate, I think the question for Republicans would be, is there sufficient discontent here among these two key voting blocks that there's an opening for Republicans? And do the Republicans have a message that would appeal to those who are discontented?
Oh, I think there's a huge opening. There's a CNN poll that came out just this morning. How would you rate the economic conditions in the country today? 10% said good. 90% said poor. First of all, you wonder who the 10% are. I think it's all members of Congress. But anyway, that just cuts across all demographics. When you add that to right track, wrong numbers being, you know, upside down now for 2 years, the president's approval ratings being so low, I think there's a battle for every soul. I think the economic discontent is wreaking havoc with traditional party ID, and I think it feeds why we now have 40% of the electorate identifying themselves as independent voters. I think there's a huge opening for Republicans.
Maria Teresa, particularly, one might argue, particularly with Latinos, wouldn't you argue, because Latinos have demonstrated a willingness to be a swing vote in the current environment that
they're definitely a swing vote, but I can share with you that the Republican Party has done an incredible job of making sure of turning off Latino voters because of the tone of immigration. And you're seeing voter rights very stringent. Two things. I mean, the Alabama law is a perfect example where all of a sudden, just by looking undocumented, you're going to be asked for your papers. That sends a signal that Republicans think that Latinos are less American than others, number one. But number two, what you're also finding is that the Republicans realize that they have a Latino problem. So they're passing very aggressive voter ID laws that are going to disproportionately affect African Americans, Latinos, and youth, basically individuals that together collectively helped bring Obama to the White House.
You think that that's a strategy? You think that's a strategy in the lieu of having policy positions that would appeal to these voters? You think it's like a deliberate strategy to pass these laws to make it difficult for these voters to participate?
I think that what happens is that the Republican Party basically took a step back and said, uh-oh, we're a little bit in trouble. We're a little bit in trouble because we've basically alienated a voting bloc that we didn't realize all of a sudden has appeared in the South. So this is off through the census. So all of a sudden, the South has actually gained 11 congressional seats because of the boom in large part of the Latino vote. The growth in Texas alone is a perfect example. 3.5 congressional seats is because of the Latino boom. 0.5 population-wise is of African Americans that were displaced by Katrina. Those are huge numbers. But if you realize that you have a bit of a Latino problem because of how aggressive you've gone against undocumented and the tone of it, then all of a sudden you're saying, I need to bide my time for at least one or two election cycles until I can fix this. How do you, you know, bide your time? You've passed very aggressive voter ID laws.
Mary Kate?
I wrote a column on this. And when you look at what is a very aggressive voter ID law, my understanding is you have to show a photo ID. And I think in modern life right now, I can't get into office buildings for business meetings without showing a photo ID. I can't buy a plane ticket without a photo ID. I don't think asking for a photo ID is an aggressive Jim Crow type of thing.
Cynthia Tucker wishes to jump in here.
I couldn't disagree
Cynthia
with
Tucker,
Mary
who
Kate
will
more
tell you
that.
She's from the South. And
I'm from the South, and I have been writing about voter ID laws for 5 or 6 years now because one of the country's first harsh voter ID laws was passed in Georgia. And let me say, this goes well beyond the matter of a simple photo ID. To keep out some young voters, Republicans in some states have ruled out your college ID. You can't use your college ID. Furthermore, it's not just simple showing identification. In some states, Republicans are now cutting back early voting days. Republicans used to love early voting because they figured it was used mostly by middle-class voters who supported Republicans. Then in 2008, a lot of Obama supporters voted early. So guess what? Republicans in several states, including Georgia, have now said, well, you know what? We're going to cut back that early voting. So this is clearly a tactic designed to just what Maria Theresa said.
We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with our seasoned, but very civil, political observers. We appreciate that. Maria Teresa Kumar, Mary Kate Carey, and Cynthia Tucker. Please stay with us. This is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. We'll be right back.